Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's really good to be with you here on A Quiet Life. This is episode number 61, and as I record this, it is Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2020. It's day 11,500 of isolation, and I'm not sure that I've won the war against the ants, and now the millipedes have started invading. No, it's not quite that bad. It's very early days in terms of isolation, and doing all right, and I hope you are too. The big happening that's happened in our house this week is that Moz has come down with shingles, so the poor man is in quite a bit of pain, and I feel very sorry for him, and we covet your prayers, as always. It is funny being in this new situation, and one thing I'm really enjoying about it is this community that's built up on Facebook, where we're all sharing our fun memes and sharing photos from our photo rolls and doing all that kind of stuff. I'm really, really loving it. And today's interview is with Beth, and we recorded it months ago, the end of last year, where we, you know, this was not even on the horizon. But it was interesting for me to think about, because one of the things that we've talked about is that she has moved around a lot in Australia and come over to Australia from the UK. And we talked a bit about community and how important that is to her, and how the church has come through for her to be community, and how important connection and community is. And now that we are feeling isolated in our homes, I just think it's more important than ever for us to think about how we can promote community where we are. And that's why I'm sharing all these things on Facebook and chatting to people, because I just think it's one of the ways that we can still feel connected even though we are seeing each other a whole lot less, if at all. So one of the things that I've been doing to improve community is having video chats with people. And yesterday I had a video chat with a friend who has 3 children at home, and she's been looking after them. Her husband's been working flat out, and so she hasn't been lonely, and she hasn't been bored, because she's so busy doing her thing and looking after her kids and looking after her husband and all the rest. But it was so good for her to have a conversation with another adult and have adult conversation, and it's so wonderful to be able to video chat. And then also in the last week, I've had a video chat with a couple of friends. One of them is in New Zealand, and when she comes over to visit us in Tasmania, we always get together, the 3 of us, and have lunch, and that's a really lovely thing that we do. But it's never occurred to us to get on a video chat and chat with each other, even anytime. And suddenly it's like, oh, we can do this. We can have a conversation, and we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep chatting now and keep that friendship going. So I think there's some good things that are coming out of this in terms of community. And I hope that you're not feeling too lonely. And I hope that this podcast is part of your community and part of what makes you feel connected with others and meeting new friends like Beth. So I'm wondering how you will invest in community during this time. And there's so many good ideas, you know, like sitting down and writing a letter to someone using pen and paper, and then going on your exercise walk and posting it in the postbox, or video chats, or normal phone conversations, or however we can do it. I mean, I just wonder what you're doing to invest in your community. Anyway, I am pleased to introduce to you my friend Beth, and I hope that she becomes some sort of a friend to you too, and that you really enjoy this conversation with her today. Today's guest is Beth, Beth and I met when she and Steve moved to Tasmania and started attending our church, and then they had to move away. And they've done quite a bit of moving, and we'll talk about that today. And Beth, as you'll hear from her accent, is from England, and they have three beautiful girls. And when I met Beth and Steve, Steve and I worked at the same university, and I'm going to have a chat to Steve a bit later, I hope, if he can fit it into his busy schedule, like Beth has fitted this into her busy schedule. But now it's quite fun because now Beth and I are doing similar jobs. So it's cool. It's been good to keep in touch through all the moving and the changes and things. And again, I'm very grateful to technology for allowing us to do that. But today I'm really happy to talk to you, Beth. So very welcome.
Hi, thanks, Ruth.
All right, so I always start at the same place. Where did you become, how did you become a Christian?
I became a Christian in my first year at university in Leeds. So towards the very end of my first year. So I'd grown up with very committed Christian parents. I'd probably, like many teenagers, floundered a bit in my teens, and it sort of stopped making much sense to me, really. It was kind of like a comforting tale, but it wasn't really a real thing. And in the UK, possibly a bit less so now, but at the time that I went to university in the 1990s, the usual thing was you went away. It's a bit different to Australia, where people tend to live at home and go to the local uni. You normally move away. So I moved away thinking, yippee, I'm finally free of all this nonsense in the house. It'll be really good to just have a normal life. and I did the normal life that I was, you know, that I felt I was expected to do, and that I thought would make me fulfilled and happy. And by the end, towards the end of the first year, I was sat there going, what's wrong with me? I don't feel any, I feel like something's really missing. I feel like there's no meaning or depth to life, or everything seems quite futile. And people are just covering it up with all these parties and fun events and shallow relationships and things. And it struck me that this was the first time in my life I'd ever, that God wasn't there, because I didn't want him there, and I was no longer in a home of people who wanted him there regardless. And so that triggered quite a bit of searching, really. Made some new friends who were my age and who turned out to be Christians, a bit like C.S. Lewis saying that he found that most of the people he liked best were Christians, and he thought he was very tolerant because he could tolerate these people and their eccentric beliefs. And then after a while I started realising perhaps I liked them because of their beliefs. And the way that their beliefs influence their behaviour and their relationships and their approach to life. And we would stay up long into the night having deep and meaningful conversations. And then, yes, I remember there was an event. There was a Christian band was playing at the University Union. I went along with my new friends. And I remember a very key moment in this particular line of a song where I really suddenly felt there was nobody there but me and God. And he was saying, do you want me or not? So, point when I became a Christian.
Yeah, wow, that's fantastic. How did it change things for you then when you became a Christian?
I remember it was really vivid at the beginning. Like, I couldn't put the Bible down. I was finding all of this incredible meaning in it. I felt like I was seeing things with a bit like I'd had, I don't know if anyone else has got poor eyesight, but when you finally get a pair of glasses that actually works and you can see clearly, I suddenly felt like I could see all this intricate detail in the world that I hadn't seen before. So, yes, it changed me a lot.
Cool. When did you meet Steve?
I met Steve a little after that. So I started going along to the Christian Union at Leeds, and there was a point, one of these events when he gave his testimony. I think that was probably Friday or a Saturday. And then on Monday morning, I was sat in these old-fashioned things called computer labs that probably don't exist anymore. I was working on an essay, and the guy next to me said, do you mind watching my stuff? I need to just pop to the bathroom. And I looked at him and said, oh, you're Steve Micklethwaite, aren't you? He was like, how do you know my name? And I said, I heard your testimony at the Christian Union. And so we got chatting. And then the following year, I think I moved in with we had a lot of overlapping friendship groups. I moved in with some people that he knew. And we were just in and out of each other's homes quite a lot. And it turned into one of those things where everybody kept teasing us that it was more than friendship. And eventually they were right.
So why did you guys move out to Australia?
Well, Steve was, we got married when Steve was partway through his PhD. So we were finishing off, I was working, he was finishing off his PhD. He got to the end of his PhD and decided that he should start applying for some jobs. And to get good practice, he applied for lots of jobs, including one in Canberra, because, you know, geology is a big international field. And he was just applying for the application practice, and then he happened to get that job. So we came over for, we did the classic British thing of coming to Australia for a 2-year contract and never going home again, really. So it was 2 years, the initial one was for 2 years at the ANU in Canberra. That stretched to about 6 years altogether. Mm. We moved to Tasmania when I was pregnant with Lily, which is when I met you, I think. I remember you having your tea when I didn't know many people at all. That was great. And then, yeah, I had Lily and Anna in Hobart, then moved to Perth quite unexpectedly. We were there for 3 years. We left Perth when I was pregnant with Zola, who was born in Sydney. Then we've been in Melbourne for the last 4 and a bit years, and now we're in Brisbane and hoping not to go anywhere else.
Yeah, it's huge. So I'll come back to that in a second, but I wanted to mention you've brought your whole family over to Australia with you, haven't
yes.
you?
Yes. Well, it was funny. My sister and her husband moved over a couple of years later, and they came over, had a lovely holiday, and kept saying, "Oh, we love it. We're going to move." And we thought that was just the kind of holiday euphoria that many people have. But they started making serious plans. So in the end, they moved over about 5 years after we did. And then Mom and Dad had all their kids over here. So when Mom retired from her job as a primary school principal, they moved over. Dad had retrained. He'd been an engineer when I was growing up, but he'd retrained as a Anglican minister. Mm. So they moved over, and there was this brief and wonderful period when they were in Tasmania too before we had to leave.
Yes, yes. Because, even though moving to Australia is good, Australia is a very large place.
It's huge.
So I wanted to talk with you about all the moving that you've done, because I know that it's just been such a huge amount of upheaval and, some of the moves you've wanted to do and some of the moves you haven't wanted to do. And I just wondered how you cope with that.
In different ways, sometimes well and sometimes badly. Most of them have been for job reasons rather than they've been initiated by the job rather than by our personal choice that we'd like to go. I think some of them have been deeply distressing. There's some of them where I felt the season was changing, and then there's others where it's been a real uprooting that I haven't been ready for. And I've just had to trust God that he knows what he's doing, even though I can't see it at the time. I'm quite an introvert. I prefer like a gathering of people that I already know at quite a deep level and feel comfortable with. Steve's much more of an extrovert. I think in a funny way, moving around a lot has taught me how to be a little bit more of an extrovert and perhaps made him a bit more of an introvert. It's quite funny. So I don't think those things are like rigidly fixed. Mm. I think in some way the moves are a tool where God has grown me a bit in learning how to enjoy knowing a range of people. And I'm incredibly, like, there's people I'm incredibly grateful for, like you, that I would never have met had I stayed in one place. But then I have really missed the opportunity to deepen those relationships, because inevitably when you leave, it's harder to, you can't maintain the same depth of connection because geography is a big factor. So the church has been a wonderful thing for us as well. I think we've really had a sense of God going before us and creating a place for us and a ready-made family of people wherever we've gone. And I think that would have been, I don't think that would be the same at all if it was, say, the tennis club or
something
like that. I think there's just a deeper depth of fellowship amongst Christians, and that's probably been the only thing that's really enabled me to cope well with all of these things.
Have you found that you just, very quickly found a church that you felt at home in, or have you had to do a fair bit of church shopping when you've gone to a new place?
In most cases, it's been quite quick. So one wonderful example probably was when we moved to Melbourne. So we had a 7-week-old baby and we didn't know anybody in Melbourne. So we rang up somebody that we'd known from St. Clements and Tassie. We rang up Mel Brown, who was back in Geelong. We knew that Geelong was like completely the other end of Victoria. But we said, do you know anybody over this way? And she did. She put us in touch with someone who was an assistant minister at the church that we ended up going to. And this woman, Bree, was wonderful. She turned into our like removal coordinator pretty much. You know, by the end of that phone call, we were coming down for a weekend. She'd arranged a family for us to stay with. She'd arranged a few lunches. She connected us with various families with kids at local schools. She put us in touch with a real estate agent in the 8 o'clock congregation. And by the time we left, you know, I think by the time we left, we had a house, a church, and various other things just in place, and several people we already knew. So that was quite
wow. Really. What an amazing person.
Well, I've had to work quite hard this time round not to kind of go, okay, God, do that again. That was really
helpful. Yes. Yeah. And God said, "Ah, oh, Beth, you're in a different place in your life now. You have to do a bit of the work yourself." Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, I said that we did similar things for a job. Wouldn't you like to tell us all what you do for a job?
Yes. Well, I actually have an answer to that now. That's nice and clear, Paul. So, I am a copywriter.
So me.
For years, it wasn't clear and simple. I was all sorts of different things, and I was quite a generalist while Steve was very specialised. I used to be incredibly envious of people who were, say, a dentist, and they knew what they wanted to do, and there were certain steps on the ladder to get there. And I've done all sorts of different things and not seen any real way that they all came together. But while we were in Melbourne, I enrolled at RMIT University and did my diploma in professional writing and editing. I've been freelancing for quite a while now. I realised I like the copywriting side of things more than the editing, which is basically the writing. Not it's basically any kind of non-fiction writing, the things that you would see in blog articles or website pages or billboard ads or video scripts, that kind of thing. Mine has always been with a health aspect to it. I realised that when I look back, I'd actually worked for the UK Health Service, the UK Department of Health. I'd worked for various health-related charities in Australia. So I feel like it's although I'm not a clinician, I've seen the health system from several different angles, including the patient angle, because I've lived with chronic conditions as well. And so, yes, I enjoy writing that. I mainly now take a lot of the medical literature and put it in plain English for, you know, ordinary people who are often worried about their health and need accurate information. And I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah, and as you say, having been on the receiving end of that, you can sort of say, "What we need to hear this, we need to hear X, Y, Z. What was your original degree in?
My original degree was in politics with a bit of history thrown in. I wanted to be a political affairs journalist at that point in time.
Yes.
Went down a different route.
There's always been some sort of desire to write then.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. I think there's perhaps more opportunities to write now. I think with the rise of the internet, there's an awful lot of content that needs writing.
Absolutely.
The good thing for me has been you can do that from anywhere. So moving around has kind of been less significant. Mm. I've been able to bring the work with me.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. So how does your faith show in that kind of a job?
Yeah, that's a slightly tricky question because I'm often not with people very much, I think. Like I'm writing for people who are a long way at the other end of, you know, I never meet my readers, for example. I often don't meet my clients either. So I think it has to be in other ways that aren't necessarily faith-driven. Like I'm good with deadlines, I'm reliable, I'm accurate, I'm truthful. I think I try not to buy into the advertising idea that this new product will change your life forever or bring great meaning to you or some of those sort of things where I think marketing is selling a whole vision of what it's like to be a person.
Mm.
Whereas I'm aware that, you know, we all make choices about the things that we buy.
Mm.
Increasingly people are making their choices on, you know, pretty sound ethical issues, and that works quite well. For me, that feeds quite well into my own viewpoint. But no product is going to hold the meaning of life for you.
Sure, absolutely. So I guess that's really part of what you're doing is advertising copy. Have you ever been in a situation where you're like, no, I can't write that for you because I don't believe in what you're trying to sell?
Not yet, but I know plenty of colleagues who are, and that ranges all sorts of things depending on what their issues are. People who don't want to write for anything relating to the Melbourne Cup because they have a strong animal welfare bent. There are issues I wouldn't want to write about, or would only want to write about in an informative way, not a recommending sort of way.
Mm.
So yes, there are. I'm aware that there are some of those possibilities out there. And yeah, people do to some extent pick and choose what they will and won't do.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes, I can. Yeah, I think I have interviewed another copywriter, Megan, and she was saying that she's quite astonished that she can use her gifts to help people out, even though her gift is just sort of writing an email that actually makes sense and takes her a lot less time than anybody else. So,
yes, it's always tricky, isn't it, when things come easily to you? You don't necessarily. I think many people undervalue what they can do because it comes easily to them.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you too about the internet. I think so I prefer the, as we know, the editing side of things more than the copywriting side of things. I just enjoy writing my own novels instead. But I do write my own blog posts as well. Now she says, now I come to think of it. It's just amazing, isn't it, that we can do this job because of the internet. I think about 10 years ago when I had little children at home, I couldn't do this job because it didn't exist.
For me now, it's a wonderfully flexible thing where I can do work that I enjoy from home in school hours and, you know, not be battling traffic and some of the wider hassles that go with. And to some extent, I've become more productive as well because there's a lot of distractions when there are other people there, and particularly with writing, when you need to shut out the noise and concentrate.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I don't know how you do the novel side. Like if I've got a brief, I can write really well to the brief, but the kind of the blank screen where you have to come up with the idea, I find that's a challenge for me.
It was definitely challenging to start off with. It's funny, once you start, the ideas start coming. It's really cool. Cool. Anyway. Yes, at the moment I'm writing about aliens in Signet. It's quite fun.
Okay. So, such a peaceful place.
Yes, I know. It was. So back to, more sensible things. When do you feel close to God?
I was thinking about that. I mean, I thought my first answer was going to be, you know, when I'm walking on a beautiful Australian beach and the waves are lapping and all creation is in harmony around me. And then I suddenly realised I was really struck by Psalm 46 recently. And I think I saw a poster of this years back that it tends to be slapped on pictures of waterfalls and lovely things. But it's actually about total chaos and relying on God in the middle of, you know, that line, be still and know that I am God, comes in the middle of all sorts of things going badly wrong.
Yeah.
And I actually think for me, I feel closest to God, oddly enough, when I am most stressed, when I am most aware that I'm at the edge of my own resources, that I can't do this by myself, that whatever it may be is beyond my strength. And that's when I remember that his grace is sufficient for me. His power is perfect in my weakness. You know, he's with me. He's reassuring me. He's gone before and, you know, That's often the times whereas when things are sailing along quite smoothly and I have the illusion that I'm in control, I tend not to notice God so much.
I like that word, the illusion that you're in control.
Yeah. It's a lovely illusion.
Yes, I would love to live there, but praise God he doesn't let us do that, does he?
No.
Yeah,
and I think that those sort of times when I do feel overwhelmed or often when I realize that I need to spend more time in prayer or that God's been trying to tell me something and I haven't been listening or when wonderful things happen, you know, someone will just ring and say, I was thinking of you, how are you going? Or things across your path, a certain verse sticks out to you and I just remember then that God is there, God is watching, God's with me. I can't do this, but God can.
So. Mm-hmm. As a busy mum of three girls, when do you manage to fit in reading the Bible and prayer and things like that?
Not terribly well. I think I'm really good at the arrow prayers where you're just like, God, help with this.
Or, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, you know, I think God has, God knows what this season of life is like. Mm. I think the deeper prayers, that sort of time and space to really reflect on what's being brought up in your life. I tend to be better there for those when I'm doing something physical, like that's where going for a walk, or often for me when I'm swimming, I'll often just do laps of the pool and pray as I swim. Mm. And for some reason, I think because my body's occupied, that seems to help my mind focus a bit. So that's often the time when I pray.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does.
Yeah. And Bible reading, I like the Psalms. I like the Bible studies that I do with other people where I get their kind of perspective on things as well. And then I find various apps quite useful for just flicking up verses to me in the middle of my day.
Yeah.
I find that actually quite helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, I like my morning verse that comes up on my phone.
Yeah.
Though sometimes I think, am I treating this a bit like a horoscope? I need to make sure that I'm not.
Yes. You know, how out of context is it?
But still, it's a good reminder to get into the Bible. So finally, what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
I think... for some reason, when I was growing up, I equated Christianity with being good. Mm. The Christians were good people, people who you were well-behaved, you were polite, it was very much like a good girl thing. And that, you know, leads you to feeling quite a bit of pressure, really, about your own performance, I think. The line in that song when I was at that... that Christian group playing on campus all those years ago was, now I know that God is for me, not against me. And that really struck me. And I think it's, I wish everyone could know it's not about us being good and God judging how we're behaving. It's about accepting his goodness. And I think that's the wonderful aspect of what God has done for us in Christ, is loving us as we are, but then transforming us into the likeness of Christ through various ways. So I wish there was less of a sense of Christianity is about all of these rules and ways of behaving, and more of a sense about it's being with God and being part of God's family.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally with you there. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been really great.
You're welcome. Thanks, Ruth.
Isn't that a wonderful takeaway thought? God is for you, not against you. Even now, he is for you. Take that with you into this day and the week to come, and may God bring you his peace and his comfort. Thanks, as always, to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music. And as always, if you found this helpful, please share it with a friend. Let's get these wonderful stories out to our community and to people for whom it will be helpful, and let's build a little community here together. Bless you all. Chat to you again next week with another chapter from My Year of Saying No.